Welcome to Diving Into Crypto.
Diving Into Crypto.
A weekly series where thought leaders share insights, strategies, and insider stories about all things crypto and Web3. Brought to you by Adlunum.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining in. We're going to kick things off with some updates. So Adlunum's media arm, that is Altcoin Observer, will be a media partner at Metamorphosis, India's premier AI Web3 gala on the 6th to the 7th of December. It's taking place during the India Blockchain Month. Altcoin Observer will also be hosting an episode for Web3 Explained on Digital Identity 3.0, Privacy and Personalization in a Regulated World on the 10th of December, 2024. So check out our LinkedIn and YouTube page for updates. Okay, let's get into another exciting episode of Diving Into Crypto, sponsored by Adlunum Inc. I'm your host, Jason Fernandez, co-founder at Adlunum. And we're really excited to jump into today's topic, maximizing returns, minimizing effort, investing in crypto made easy. We have a very special guest with us today, Dan Goldman, founder and CEO of AllTrade. Dan is a blockchain crypto veteran since 2012, so it's about the time I got into crypto as well, so I'd love to jump into that discussion. And it's the first white-label brandable DeFi as a service platform built on the Algorand blockchain. And we're also going to get into Bitcoin being 100,000, which is, over 100,000 now. So historic day, historic times. Dan, thank you so much for joining us. And maybe you can tell us a bit about yourself, AllTrade, how you guys got started, and what the vision is.
Sure. Thank you for having us. It's good to be talking with you guys. About myself, I mean, I've been in tech my whole life, since the mid-90s. And I've been, as you mentioned, I've been in the blockchain and crypto space since 2012. Bitcoin wasn't at 100K there then, that's for
right.
Sure.
What did it cost anyway when you jumped in?
At the time, I mean, I was already kind of aware of it when it was in the, few dollars, I think. Yeah. I did a little bit of mining back then, I think. I can't remember, but, nothing serious. Like, it was just for curiosity. It's not like I did anything. Already you needed kind of like, some serious machines to get something significant, But right. So I did it more for curiosity. It was in the dollars and then $100 shortly thereafter. It was around that time, it was kind of going in and out, and then a few hundred dollars. It was all around that time. I don't remember exactly precisely, but
Right.
Fast forward to the last few years, I've been building AllTrade. To give you a brief idea of what AllTrade is, we're bringing new trading technology to the market called native exchanges, or NEX. So it's not a SEX, not a DEX, but a NEX.
Right.
And the reason we're bringing NEXs to the market is because there are a lot of issues with current trading technology, and we've seen it again and again and again, right? So you have centralized exchanges on the one hand, which is a great product, right? The UX is fantastic, but a small little problem. You have to give them your babies, right? Your soul. You have to give them your coins, and now they own you. And we've seen what happens when they do. FTX is just one of so many recent examples, and going all the way back to Mt. Gox. Were still paying dividends, quote unquote, on what they did, right? Because they screwed up the market for us again a while ago, because suddenly there's a dump of coins coming, right? So We've seen it happen again and again. And on the other hand, you have DEXs, which solve, you know, a certain need for sure, but they have a lot of shortcomings, right? It's pretty much, it's well known. You have high gas costs for trading. You have MEV attacks. There's no proper pricing because it's an AMM, so you don't have a real order book. And the whole cross-chain aspect of it is a nightmare, really. It's a bad UX, and it also exposes you to a lot of bridge risk, which is not good for anybody. So all of these things kind of, you know, led us to say, okay, we need a better technology. But that was, and that's what a NEX does, right? It gives you the capabilities of a centralized exchange with cross-chain order books, but without bridging, so that without wrapped assets involved, so there's no bridge risk here, and no MEV attacks, no gas for trading, and yet it's 100% non-custodial. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so you get the benefits practically of a centralized exchange from, you know, the trading technology and capabilities, but non-custodial. So it's, you're overcoming the shortcomings of DEXs and SEXs, and that's what a NEX is. And really, if you think about it, it's also the next evolution of trading solutions, right? But that was just half the story. The other half, as you mentioned, AllTrade is building this as a white label, right? So we are enabling anybody really to launch their own NEX. So AllTrade is not a retail exchange.
Okay.
Instead, it's a white label SaaS infrastructure that allows anybody to launch their own NEX. And the reason we did this is because there's a very big problem in the market, which we've seen in crypto Twitter a lot lately, right? People suddenly started talking a lot about how
liquidity.
Well, liquidity is part of it, but really, you know, the fact that projects are kind of in the hands of SEXs when it comes to listings, you know, having to pay insane listing fees, tens of thousands to millions, and anywhere in between, right? Which is ridiculous. And all sorts of other issues, right? So at the end of the day, you end up having to pay a lot of money for those listings, give them tokens, all sorts of stuff, right? And then you end up having to send your users, your community, to those exchanges. And, you know, that's not good for you. You're losing retention, you're increasing friction, and you're not even earning trading fees from it. So so this is why we built AllTrade as a white label solution that enables, you know, any project really to launch their own native exchange in, what, 10 minutes, no cost, no development. They can brand it, they can set their own trading fees, and most importantly, they can list their own token for trading literally in a few clicks, you know. Yeah, and let their users trade right there and then, earn the trading fees from it and so on, bring their market maker, whatever they need to do. And of course they can list any other token that exists in our network, right? So if there's a trading pair, they can list it. It comes with all its existing liquidity and trading volumes across all the partners who listed that same pair. So if you take it a step forward in your mind for a second, you'll realize that also means that if you list your own token, you could get co-listed by other partners in the network.
Uh-huh.
So you can gain
other exchanges.
Exactly. So you can gain more and more exposure for your token as our network grows. Right?
Got it.
And it's all shared liquidity. It's all a single order book for each pair, so everybody's trading together. So there's a lot of network effects that can be built, but each project or owner of a NEX actually maintains value inside their own community.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I get it. So if you're adding, so by the way, just for some context, I used to head an exchange of SEX, and you're right, like one of the biggest issues is, of course, you're giving up control off your tokens. And a lot of sexes that even have thus far been considered safe, you know, have all had their issues. I think one of the largest exchanges in India was hacked, and then basically customers lost all their funds. So a lot of people want to keep it, but one of the issues is, you know, let's say you use Ledger. Your only option right now, I think, using within the Ledger app is to use something like Changely. You're using essentially the Changely liquidity, and the spread there is massive. So it's like if Bitcoin is at 75, you're looking at like 73,000 to sell Bitcoin, right? So like the liquidity tends to become a really huge problem with a lot of DEXs. Is that something that you've encountered?
Well, again, within AllTrade, first of all, AllTrade is still on testnet. Our mainnet is actually, as we speak, being deployed. We've been at it for the last several days, kind of preparing our mainnet launch. So here's a little bit of alpha here. Mainnet is literally launching any moment, and we have already more than 60 white label partners waiting to launch their Nexus with us. So that it's going to be very interesting the next few weeks and months. But to circle back to the liquidity question, so while we're not yet on mainnet, I can tell you what our, you know, what we're doing. We have, you know, certain pairs will be available in the platform that partners could list already. That's for some of the major tokens. There will be market makers there who, you know, bring tight spreads. So that's, you know, that's the cool thing about it, is that it operates from a technical perspective. It operates like a centralized exchange. It operates, you know, with real order books, limit orders, market orders. It's almost indistinguishable from a centralized exchange in that regard. It's not a DEX, right? It's not an AMM. So depending on, of course, demand and market conditions, you know, you could have tight spreads there exactly like you would on centralized exchanges. But the only difference is that when you're depositing assets into a NEX, you're not losing control, and you're not giving control to anybody else. That's the
big difference. That was going to be my other question, is sort of in terms of protection of user funds. Like, what are the potential dangers, let's say, for a user? What are the areas of vulnerability that they have to be concerned about when it comes to, since they're not, you know, giving control of their tokens? Their potential danger is only, even if there is such a potential danger, it would only be at the time when they actually end up doing the trade, right? Or what are the potential, you know?
Well, the main, so there's still, you know, like any blockchain application, there's still a smart contract involved, right? So, anything with smart contracts also carries some potential risk there. So, sure. You know, and that's really where it is, right? But the difference is, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, like working with a DEX, for example, you're not depositing the assets, right? But when you're doing, because it's atomic in the same block, but whenever you're doing something that's cross-chain, then yeah, you are essentially not only depositing, but, the asset gets wrapped into another chain, right? And then when there's a wrapping, when you wrap assets, the exposure kind of multiplies significantly,
right?
Because not only are you then susceptible vulnerable to the bridge itself, right? The security of the bridge itself that created, you know, minted new assets, right? So if there's a flaw there, you could get screwed. But if you think about it, that asset that was wrapped, you know, created on another chain, now is a generic asset, right, on that chain. So let's say, I don't know, you're wrapping Aave from Ethereum to Solana or to Polygon or something, right? And then you're trying to trade it over there, right? But this asset now is generic for that specific bridge that wrapped it. And it means that any other dApp on that target chain that is, you know, utilizing this asset for whatever it is, right, trading or staking or whatever, effectively, if that dApp gets compromised, you know, completely unrelated to the dApp you're using, right, for trading,
Sure.
If that happens, then that wrapped token now got messed up, exploited. So now there's a chain effect that actually affects you, even though you have nothing to do with that other dApp that got exploited, right? Mm-hmm. But that affects you because it affects that token that got wrapped. So whenever you're using wrapped tokens in cross-chain operations, you're getting huge risk exposure that you didn't really sign up for. And this is one of the big things that AllTrade has done with native exchange technology, where you don't have that exposure because there are no wrapped assets involved. This is why it's called a native exchange. You're depositing assets natively and you're trading them. You're trading the native asset. You're not really trading on wrapped assets.
Okay? Got it.
So that's the differentiation here.
Have you looked at Chainlink CCIB? They have this this thing where you can sort of deposit funds on any chain and have it pop out on the other side on any other chain.
I mean, there are all sorts of solutions out there, but again, if they're wrapping assets, that's the same.
Yeah, there's a danger. That's
where the problem is, right? So mm-hmm. I personally wouldn't touch wrapped assets.
So what is the model? Because you mentioned free, you know, you mentioned it's free for a company to trade. Like, is it sort of a rev share on the transaction fees? Is that where it is?
It is, exactly. Yeah, on the trading fees, correct. Yeah.
Got it. Well, I mean, I think that's a really brilliant idea, because what you're doing is, and this is, by the way, like, you know, something I wondered for a really long time as to why a lot of these generic exchanges don't choose to sort of plug into the same liquidity, you know, the same liquidity pools, or sort of share liquidity pools. But I think that with the way that you've structured it, I think that, you know, it makes sense for somebody to do it, and then also for them to then, you know, share revenue. And what is the rev share, just out of curiosity? Like, is it different for different companies, or do you have a standard thing?
No, it's a standard thing. Actually, we give 90%, we start our partners with 90%, and then, you know, we give them what we call a free earn cap, so they can earn a certain dollar value at that 90%. And then once they exhaust it, they have an option. Either they drop to the next tier, you know, 70%, it's a 50, etc., or they can stake, once the AllTrade token comes out, its biggest utility on the, you know, B2B side, is going to be, you know, they could stake the token in order to maintain, for example, that 90% rev share.
Got it. That makes sense. I mean, a sliding scale makes a lot of sense, because the more useful it is to them, the more willing they will be to sort of decide whether they want to stake, you know, tokens. And I assume that the trading fees are discounted based off of, like, stake tokens, correct? Like,
well, the trading fee is a different story, right? And that's where it gets really interesting, because every white label partner can set their own trading fees. They can set their taker fees, you know, whatever they want. But they will actually be able to plug in their own utility token into the system and actually offer their users trading fee discounts based on staking or holding a balance of their own utility token. So with AllTrade, they can actually add more utility to their own utility token. And, you know, things like getting trading fee discounts or even paying trading fees with their own utility token. But whenever they do that, the AllTrade token will be there also with B2B2C utility, where the, you know, their users could actually use AllTrade tokens in order to boost the discounts or boost, you know, rewards and things of that nature.
Makes sense. And when you guys, when did you say y'all were launching on the mainnet? Like, when will this be live for people to sign up, for example?
It's literally, you know, it could literally still happen this week or early next week. We are in the process of launching the mainnet, you know, making sure everything works, testing.
Did y'all do, like, any sort of auditing, just out of curiosity? Because I know.
Yeah, of course. Once Mainnet is live and public, the audit docs will be available as well.
Cool. And who are you using?
For the audit?
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity. I mean, we're using a company called Entersoft.
Okay, got it, got it. Yeah, no, I'm familiar with Endosoft, for sure. Yeah, like there's a few auditing companies that are really, really good. And one of the things about audits is, like, as you know, there's companies that have, like, actually got it audited, and then, you know, they've had vulnerabilities anyways, and there's not been, like, a whole lot of backlash for them. I mean, not for them, for the auditing company. So it's really important to choose a good auditing software. So, not software, service, I meant service. But yeah, she's shifting gears a bit. I see here, you know, you founded one of Israel's earliest startup service, ISP, internet service provider. So I'm curious, like, you know, you must have been fairly early into the internet space. I see you've, like, I think the first time I ever used the internet was around like 96, 97. I think, you founded an ISP in 95.
Yeah. That's right.
So tell us, like, I mean, I'm just curious how you got from, like, you know, like an ISP to, like, today and in crypto. Like, that journey is I'm sure will be very, very interesting to people.
Well, I mean, you know, I've done all sorts of things in tech. I've also been involved in some clean tech, you know, not just internet related stuff, but you know, with the internet, I was still in high school, back in Israel at the time, when I started that ISP. You know, there was no internet, public internet in Israel at the time. You could only get onto it with, if you were a student in a university.
Right.
That was the only way to get on it in 94. And I got very curious about it, you know, when I heard about it, and it was complicated at the time. You know, you couldn't even get communication line, you know, to the U.S., to the internet. It was actually illegal at the time to do so. You could only do that if you were a university. So I actually started, the first thing I started was kind of like an internet technology-based BBS type of solution.
Yes, I'm familiar with those. Matter of fact, that's how I got into it as well. That's amazing. Like, that's literally how I got into the internet and everything.
Yeah,
we had shell accounts. So you had to dial in, and it was black and white.
Yeah, so I actually built, believe it or not, I actually built on Linux. At the time, you know, Linux was kernel like 0.1 or something. I can't remember exactly, but I actually built a BBS based on a text browser. There was a text browser called Lynx at the time.
Yeah,
so I actually built a local internet in Israel with, you know, text web pages, you know, with links. And I kind of hacked the IRC client a little bit, you know, built a local IRC, with Hebrew support. So I hacked it to support Hebrew. And so I actually built, you could say I built the first internet in Israel, because it was a local internet, technically. It just wasn't connected to the world. And then in 95, we were finally able, you know, to get a line to the U.S. and connected to, like, actually connect people to the full internet outside. So that's kind of how we got started there. But, you know, fast forward in 2010, I actually heard already about Bitcoin from a friend, and, it was sounding interesting, but I was busy with something else at the time, and it wasn't until, like, I don't know, 2012, that I had the headspace to really think about it and look into it. So, it's just, you know, being involved in the industry, you hear about the stuff, and then whenever it picks your curiosity, you start, you know, looking into it. And yeah, I've been involved with it, you know, ever since.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I often joke to people that, like, when I got started on the internet, it was black and white because they had these little shell accounts that you had to dial into. And similarly, like, you had to be a student. And I think the student accounts were like, I don't know, like $8, I think. And then you, and you had to, you'd have like Eudora, you know, like Pine. Eudora came later. So Pine was, like the email client, and you'd have to like basically type one and enter. They would get you into the Pine UI, and then you'd exit and you'd go back, right back to this, you know, menu where you could kind of choose different options, and then email was one of them. And I remember like Hotmail was just getting started back then, and I signed up for Hotmail account because otherwise you couldn't get your own email account. Like it was this really weird email account, for, like government email account. But yeah, and then it's amazing how far it's come. And now, you know, we're literally at, so 2013, July was when I first bought some Bitcoin. And it was like $13. So it had actually dropped. So it was higher in 2012 than it was in like sometime 2020.
Yeah, there was a big drop, I think, from like 100 and something back to like the double digits, like low double digits. Yeah.
So it was 13, I think, when I got in. And, like just because, and by the way, it was like I was a columnist, right? So I used to, like you were talking about exposure and technology, and because I was a columnist, I heard about Bitcoin. I wrote a column on it, and then that's coincidentally, you know, bought some. And now we're sitting over here, this is 5th December, literally a historic day, with Bitcoin crossing 100K, going all the way up to 104. I mean, right now it's hovering at 103. So, I mean, this is just an amazing time. I'm curious, what do you think is next for, I know this is such a common question in crypto, and I'm sure you get it a lot, but what do you think is next for Bitcoin, altcoins, IDOs? Like, how do you think the market's going to shape up in 2025?
Well, for Bitcoin right now, unlike, if you had asked me that a few months ago, I would say, it'll, you know, 50-50, it'll go up, it'll go down. I have no prediction. Right now, I still don't have a clear prediction, but I can tell you what is likely to happen based on if certain events transpire. So there's currently one very, very big event that everybody, that is on the horizon, and everybody is kind of, waiting to see if it happens or not. And that's the National Bitcoin Reserve that Donald Trump and RFK and a lady from Congress that I forget right now, have said that they will implement, right? If that happens, there's no telling what might happen with Bitcoin. I mean,
yeah,
it could go into the hundreds of thousands. And if they do that, then there might be a snowball effect of other countries doing so as well. So, again, this is a lot of speculation, right? Sure. But now it's speculation based on, I mean, speculation of what will happen if they do it, but it's also...
That is what they've said.
You know,
that
is their statement. This is what they said, right? So,
right.
You know, politicians, right? So politicians don't have a great track record of actually doing what they said they will, what they promised to do. So, we have to wait and see. But if it does happen, then I would say there's a much greater chance than 50%, in my opinion, that Bitcoin would soar significantly. How much? It's anybody's guess. I'm not in the trenches of trading every day on the actual trading side, right? I build trading technologies, but I'm not a, I don't trade Bitcoin on a day-to-day. So I don't have that crystal ball that other traders have. But these are the events or the big event, right? There are others too, you know, like what happens if Michael Saylor succeeds in convincing Microsoft to get a Bitcoin reserve, right? And if they do, what kind of snowball effect will that have on other companies? So there are all sorts of things that are happening in the market that if they transpire now, you know, could kind of coalesce or confluence into a major breakout far beyond what we've seen so far, and also could not, right? I mean, if they don't happen, or if other major you know macro events like what happened yesterday, suddenly Seoul, you know, South Korea, a country that has been relatively very stable you know, in the forefront of technology and all sorts of, and democracy and all sorts of things in recent decades. Suddenly, out of the freaking blue, at least for me, maybe if I was very geopolitically involved, yeah, I would see something there, but I don't know. But at least to the layperson like me in that regard, it was out of the blue, martial law, what the hell?
Yeah.
And suddenly people dumping Bitcoin because they probably needed cash, fiat, you know, to weather the storm there. So, you know, so they started selling Bitcoin. I think I heard, and I didn't verify it, but I heard that as low as maybe low 70s just to get out, you know, and have cash to support whatever they need. So,
yeah,
you know, these kinds of macro events, could have a significant effect, right? God forbid World War III with everything that Putin is doing, for God's sakes. All this, you know, craziness. Yeah. So the point is, we have certain events that we're waiting for, and the wait will be, you know, kind of over by the end of January, give or take, assuming that they actually act on it or say, all right, we're gonna do it soon or whatever, right? But so we'll see where it goes. So we have a couple of months till then.
Yeah.
Beyond Bitcoin, you know, alts are already kind of seeing some renaissance right now, but I'm not your expert on what's going to happen with the alt market, you know. Obviously it's affected by what happens with Bitcoin and general sentiment in the market, which is good right now and hopefully will continue to be good in the near future. So generally, there's reason to be optimistic, but again, crypto, right? So anything can change from today to tomorrow. Regarding IDOs, all I can tell you is that, again, with the technology that AllTrade is bringing to the market, we're helping companies, you know, support their token launch efforts, right? Because being able to have your own exchange and list your token there and not be completely dependent on sexes and dexes is a significant boost. And I think it's going to become an industry standard, you know, for companies to have their own exchange like that. Be it
so how
right
does
now,
liquidity work there? Do they put their own liquidity, these coins? And what is
it? It's like
amount?
They would on a centralized exchange, right? So in a centralized exchange, when you're listing your token, you're essentially hiring a market maker, giving them inventory, and they do the market making, right? So this works pretty much the same way. You'll hire a market maker, bring them to the platform. You know, you could use a market maker that we introduce you to. We have several of them that work with us who we can introduce you to. But it's pretty much the same thing, right? There's no differentiation in that regard because it's still an order book, right? Which is good, by the way. Again, don't forget that order books are far more efficient and better for users than AMMs are.
Right,
because you can control the price, and you can get very tight spreads, and there's no slippage really, depending on the size of your order, of course, but, you know, you can actually set a limit price, and you know exactly what you're gonna get, or, you know, the max you're gonna pay, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas, you know, in an AMM, you're just saying, okay, this is what you're offering me, but, and I have a, you know, 1% slippage, but you don't exactly know what you're going
to get. You have to put on USDT liquidity as well, right? On a DEX. I mean, but what about like?
In the next two. I mean, you know, again, you have to provide both sides to provide liquidity. You have to provide both sides of the trade. But again, a market maker can actually keep tight spreads, and support the market. Whereas in an AMM, it's automatic, but you don't really have good control over it. So
just out of curiosity, what's the, let's say somebody was launching like 100K, in liquidity of their token. Do they match that with 100K in USDT?
Typically, I would say yes, but, you know, it kind of depends on the needs. You know, the market maker would usually tell you what they estimate is needed. You know, often it would be half and half, but, you know, it could vary depending on the situation.
Right, makes sense. I mean, that is just typically what we hear usually, you know, so.
Yeah. This is the cool thing about the native exchange technology, right? That it's really like a centralized exchange in terms of capabilities and the way things work, which is good. Let's not forget that centralized exchanges, the product, the trading technology of centralized exchanges is the right one, right? It's a great solution. But only one tiny little problem is that you actually have to give them control of your tokens, and that ruins the whole thing. And now you have native exchanges where you get that type of technology, but without custody, right? So you can keep control of your tokens, and yet it's not limited to one specific chain. It's cross-chain, and it's not using wrapped assets, so you don't have the bridge risk involved, right? So you kind of get all the benefits and none of the drawbacks. And by the way, if anybody's curious, we already support Ethereum, Polygon, BNB, Avalanche, Arbitrum, Optimism, Base, Algorand, Solana, and soon we'll add Aptos, Sui, Near, Ton, Tron, and even Bitcoin.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think it would be very interesting to see sort of how this plays out and whether it indeed becomes the standard. Because, you know, one of the possible use cases that I see is, you know, you have companies that, let's say, work together. Let's say they have a game that, let's say, they're putting out together, and it requires both their tokens. So assuming both of those companies have accounts with you guys, they can essentially both offer each other's tokens as well as their own. And so, because a lot of guys won't want to be, you know, a DEX for just any token other than their own. There usually would have to be some sort of relationship, either a relationship or some sort of relation, philosophically speaking, between them and the other token that they're adding. You know, and so I think when you have companies that are, let's say, partnered together, and let's say they launch a joint game that requires, let's say, both tokens, then they could essentially both offer it, you know, simultaneously.
Yeah,
and also there's a benefit of the white labeling.
Yeah. That's you know, true. And I would say, you know, some companies might be interested in a specific niche. Right. So, for example, they want to do just RWA type of tokens. One of our partners is doing that. Or they might be just interested in memes or just interested in utility tokens or just DeFi tokens. You know, so they could have a niche of what they want to let their users trade, other than their own token. Right. So really that's the cool thing here is that we give them ownership and choice. They can do whatever works for them, for their brand, for their communities. It's ownership and control. And this is, you know, what Web3 and crypto is all about to begin with. And we kind of lost our way a little bit early on where, you know, we lost some of that autonomy to the centralized solutions because we didn't have something better. Now we do. AllTrade is now bringing something better and brings back, you know, kind of like helps the projects and the community to take back crypto.
Sure. And it definitely needs taking back. I'm just curious. So I'm curious, you know, about your own token. When are you guys launching that on, you know, a SEX, or are you guys doing your IDO soon? Like, I'm just curious.
We don't have a specific date for it yet. Mainnet is coming, as I said, literally in the next few days. The token itself, probably in early Q1.
Got it.
But we don't have a specific date for it right now. We are doing a private round at the moment, you know, additional funding. But the public stuff is still a little bit a ways.
Got it. Makes sense. And in terms of an exchange, have you guys decided kind of like what exchanges you guys want to be on when it comes to sex?
Well, you know, first and foremost, the Ultrate token will be available on all the Nexes that launch with us. But then, you know, we're talking with all the usual suspects in the sex world to see if we also want to have a centralized listing as well. But that would be, you know, once we figure out the timing for everything and who we want to work with, et cetera, you know, that'll be announced. But
got it. You know. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And I mean, I assume that, you know, generally you would want to do a launch and then sort of make it available, because you have like a period, you have like a week generally, you know, you might do a series of launch pad launches, and then end up on a DEX, and in your case, obviously your own DEX, and then finally, and your partner's DEXs, and then finally, on a SEX. This generally sort of is a progression for most tokens, so.
Yeah, so, you know, we are not ones to do, you know, always the typical thing, as you can see from the technology that we're bringing and what we're doing. But, you know, that might be the case. We may end up doing an airdrop. You know, we don't know yet what exactly will happen.
Sure. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah.
And then what do you have an idea of how much sort of off your... By the way, I'm really into tokenomics, so like forgive the deep dive on this. But so I'm curious, in terms of like your public sale, do you all have an idea of like what percentage of your total token you plan to release to the public?
Not at the moment.
Not yet. Yeah, I mean, it's early. You still have a lot of time to decide that. It's just something that I'm super fascinated with. But okay, cool. Interesting. So now, what trends do you sort of see in the DeFi industry that excite you the most? So, you know, what innovation are you looking at, and that you see sort of means to sort of monetize decentralized finance in the near future? You know, and the reason I asked, by the way, is because we spoke kind of like forward looking about Bitcoin, and we also talked about IDOs a little bit. But you know, you are the DeFi guy. I mean, you're probably
honestly, I'm focused on what we're building, right? I mean,
sure,
we are already ourselves bringing huge innovation to the market. I leave innovation, you know, other stuff to other people, you know.
Sure.
I don't have a, you know, things are moving so fast anyways. Every day there's something new, you know, just a short few months ago, or however long, I can't remember, you know, liquid staking was all the rage, and it's already yesterday's news, right?
Yeah.
So, there's a lot happening, in the market. I don't necessarily have my finger on the pulse of everything that's happening every day. You know, building this massive technology called native exchanges is already a monumental task, and I'm heads down in this innovation before I can be, you know, wrap my head around everything else that's happening.
You
know,
okay.
I never know. It's funny because I never know how you know, founders who are building something, you know, I always wonder the founders who are always, you know, like at events nonstop and, you know, keeping tabs on everything that's happening in the world. When are they exactly spending time building their actual thing?
Yeah.
So I made a conscious choice. I'm spending my time, 100% of my time, building Ultrate, or 99%, right? Right now I'm on a call with you, right? So that's time. I'm literally, I got off the, you know, the, a team meeting on with my devs, you know, to do this. Right.
Well, I appreciate
but
that.
This is rare for me to do, relatively. So I always want. I made a conscious choice to spend nearly my entire time on building and making sure that we deliver the best things in sliced bread to the market. So that's our focus.
Oh, that makes sense. So let's talk about then cross-chain trading, since that's sort of more up your alley. I'm curious, what do you think? So first, if you can sort of explain that for the layman, and then also if you can sort of tell us what you think about how you see it evolving and how you see, you know, all what you guys are doing playing a part in that.
Sure. Well, cross-chain, it is, you know, the name says what it is, right? I mean, you have a token on chain X and you want to exchange it for a token on chain Y, right? That's what cross-chain is, really. And now, you know, your solution, again, if you go to a centralized exchange, then by its nature, it is cross-chain. You can just, you know, trade between whatever tokens, and you can just withdraw them to, you know, to their chains, their respective chains, right? Whereas indexes, you know, you can't really, right? I mean, you need some kind of bridging solution in order to do that, which again exposes you to a lot of risk, right? So you want to go from, you know, I don't know, ETH on Ethereum to SOL on Solana, or any, you know, ERC20 or SPL token in those chains. So if you go all these bridges or DEX aggregators, etc., that you're depositing your asset into a smart contract, and then they behind the scenes, you know, utilize various bridges, etc., in order to move things around, and ultimately give you the token that you wanted on that other exchange. On that other chain. Yeah. And you don't even necessarily know exactly what happens in the back end, you know, like behind the scenes. Sometimes you can choose which bridge will be involved in it. And you have no idea if this bridge is secure, if it has issues. We've seen so many things happen in the last couple of years around that it's just, it's kind of scary. Especially when you're, you know, dealing with large sums. Whereas with AllTrade, the process is much more like in a centralized exchange, where you're just depositing the asset into a, you know, natively into a smart contract on its native chain. So you could, you know, let's say you want to trade ETH, Sol ETH, okay, as a trading pair, right? So you could deposit ETH on Ethereum or Sol on Solana, and then that goes into a smart contract, and it just stays there. You know, we don't wrap that asset to another chain, and yet you can still, you know, go on a native exchange where you deposited it and just trade in that trading pair completely seamlessly. So you could go from Sol to ETH or ETH to Sol and just then withdraw, you know, those tokens natively to their native chains. It never goes through any wrapped assets whatsoever. It's completely native. You don't pay gas costs for the trading, only deposits and withdrawals, exactly like in a centralized experience, right?
Wow.
Yeah, and there are no NEV attacks. And no, you know, when you're doing, for example, you don't even know this, but when you're doing a cross-chain exchange, you know, through these bridges, etc., you're actually often going through multiple DEXs, and you could be exposed, you are exposed, and you don't even know if you're the victim of an MEV attack on every single one of those DEXs along the way. Mm-hmm. You have no idea. So, you know, you're not getting great pricing. You're paying sometimes a lot of gas for it, and so on and so on. So, for the occasional trader, you know, or the occasional swapper, it's mm-hmm. a solution. But for those who want to really trade, it's not a good solution. And right. Annex is pretty much the best thing you can find from a technology perspective for trading that, you know, keeps the control and yet has all the benefits of a centralized exchange technology and none of the drawbacks of DEXs.
Yeah, that makes sense. So now, you know, you mentioned a lot of, so you mentioned like cross chains and stuff like that, but you guys are built on Algorand, and what makes that you know, a compelling choice to building a decentralized trading platform when it comes to other layer one blockchains?
Well, so just to clarify, from a user perspective, they don't know and don't care that we, you know, we utilize Algorand as part of our backend, right? The reason we went with that, and we had a choice, right? We could do it, for example, on Solana. The reason we went with Algorand for that backend aspect is the combination of security, speed, cost, and ease of development. And of course, stability, which is like, you know, paramount, right? So in Algorand, Algorand has been live on mainnet as long, if not a bit longer than, or about as long as Solana has. Solana has had so many outages already. You know, significant ones too. Outages, service degradations, et cetera, et cetera. Algorand has had, at the time that we chose it, had zero. And now, 3 years later, still zero.
Wow, they've really done well then. I mean, I remember, I think Sui, I don't know, what was it, like a couple of weeks ago, they were down for like a day.
Yeah. And yet, Algorand, just to clarify, single block finality. You don't have that, not in Solana. Sui, I think, maybe claims that they have it, but I can't attest to it. But real single block finality that's secure. So no forks, no, you know. Blocks take less than 3 seconds consistently, like 2.9 seconds, something like that these days. Proven mainnet TPS, more than 10K. TPS.
Wow.
Proven on mainnet. It's not, you know, and none of that, you know, what you get like protocol transactions like in Solana. No. Real, actual transactions. Okay? Wow. So, yeah, Algorand is, it's funny because it's been, you know, its token has been pumping for the last couple of weeks significantly. It's still very far off from where it was a couple of years ago, you know, before the market started melting. But, you know, Algorand has always been kind of like an unsung hero where, you know, it felt a little maybe too corporate to people in the crypto sphere. And so they kind of shunned it, but it doesn't get the credit that it deserves, really. And by the way, you can develop on Algorand, you know, right now. You could develop in pure Python. You could develop in JavaScript.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But yeah, for, you know, from a user perspective, they don't know. They don't care. They just, they can deposit, like I said, ETH on Ethereum, SOL on Solana. They can trade them. They can use their native wallets. You know, whatever it is, Phantom, MetaMask, doesn't matter. They don't, you know, the fact that we utilize Algorand as part of our backend does not affect them in any way, shape, or form.
So how do you balance offering sort of sophisticated training tools and then also maintaining accessibility for more non-technical people? Because, you're talking about how they don't really care. It's just a question of ease of use. So how do you sort of balance those two things?
I mean, it's by nature of how we develop the platform, right? So to trade, all you need to do is just choose a wallet that works for you to do a login, right? And login just means signing a message, you know, in your wallet that proves you own that wallet, which is pretty common these days. And that's it. Once you're logged in with it, you can just, you know, utilize the interface. The interface is that of a centralized exchange right now, right? It's not a simplified one. We will have a simplified version, right? You know, with like, that is more like swap-like.
Right.
That will be easier, but, you know, there's a lot more that we're building, but, you know, anyone who trades on a Binance type of exchange
will be familiar.
Will be familiar, you know, fish in water, with the Nex. But with the benefit of not having to pay gas costs for trading and not worrying about bridges and especially not worrying about having to give up control of their tokens.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And also the branding, I think, aspect is really unique. So how important do you think branding is when it comes to the adoption and success of certain DeFi platforms? And what are you guys integrating in order to engage users and build loyalty? I think that the decentralized way where, like, you're partnering with multiple and you have essentially, like, a network of exchanges, that's really novel. But I'm just curious, like, what you're talking about.
Yeah, but the way it will work, you know, and the reason why we expect it to work is because it works with network effects, right? So everything is connected. So liquidity and trading volumes are all connected. So if we carry that example of that ETH, you know, Sol ETH trading pair, right? So if 100 of our white label Nexus, Nex partners choose to list Sol ETH as a trading pair, then, you know, if each one of those 100 partners has 1,000 users on average trading, then you have 100,000 people trading in that same Sol ETH pair.
Yeah.
So it's shared liquidity, shared order books, right? So this is, you know, the strength of building something that has network effects, right? We still need to build it, right? We need to bring more and more and more partners. So as we grow, the network grows. Every partner that joins brings value to every other partner in the network, and by extension, to every trader in the network, regardless of which, you know, which next brand they came in through.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Now, so let's say if you had, like, an unlimited development budget and, like, time, what would be, like, the things on the horizon for your platform? I mean, are you guys looking at, like, I don't know. So I'll tell you why. So, for example, I think 1inch has, like, introduced a debit card, right? So, I mean, things like that I think would be fairly useful.
Well, I don't know that we'll introduce a debit card, but, you know, we do have perps on the horizon, and we have on the roadmap, and we have, we already have a whole points system, a white label point system that would enable partners to build their own points program for their users. And there's a lot more that's coming. There's going to be an app store inside so that people could be, you know, a third party app store. So people could be developing all sorts of apps, you know, for trading and whatever else that would enable a partner, a white label partner, to choose, oh, I like this app, I think my users would like to use it. And with one click, they could enable that app and let their users use it.
Wow.
Right? Inside the trading app. So there's a lot more that's coming into AllTrade. And if I had, like I said, an unlimited, development budget, I'd be building all of it today, but, you know.
You have to wait till things, time is right, right? So it's also about, like, the users being accustomed to getting to this. Sometimes you have to do it, like, step by step and then slowly introduce new features. If you do a whole bunch at one time, it might overwhelm people.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. But we have a very extensive, roadmap, and, right now we're focusing on just getting the mainnet out, but, you know, once it's out, we're gonna start diving into that roadmap.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're almost to the end of this, session, so maybe we can sort of, close it out by, like, looking into the sort of future. What advice would you give sort of people getting, Web3 enthusiasts or sort of companies looking to get involved in DeFi? Would you have any advice for them and things that, like, lessons you've learned over the years? What keeps you going, for example?
Well, just, you know, the main advice for founders, for sure, build the damn thing. Focus on actually building something that brings value. And try not to be a copycat if you can avoid it, or at least bring something new to the table. For anybody just joining, you know, the DeFi space, do your research, learn, understand, you know, be curious. For companies that are launching, you know, something and want to bring more value to their users and be able to self-list their token, et cetera, contact AllTrade to get your own native exchange going. It literally takes 10 minutes to do that. That's about it, really. And I'm very excited for, you know, for our mainnet and our partners to launch and
that's
to
great
keep
advice.
Building.
No, that's great advice. And I think what you guys are doing, there's definitely a space for it in the market. I can already see, think of a few companies that would probably be, really good fits, for what you guys are building. So, thank you so much for your time today. Big thank you to you for joining us, Dan.
My pleasure.
Huge shout out to everyone who tuned in. We're excited to bring you more insights into Web3. Stay tuned. We'll be seeing you next Thursday for, I think, the 100th episode, I believe, of Diving into Crypto. So thank you so much, and thanks a lot, Dan. Appreciate your time.
Thank you as well. Thanks,
y'all,
everyone.
Have a great day, everybody. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Diving into Crypto, proudly hosted by Adlunum, the first engage-to-earn platform with a proof-of-attention model and dynamic NFT investor profiles.